What gives you goosebumps, listener? Is it the 90s kid horror of R.L. Stine? The anti-fascist tales of the Animorphs? Or did your parents let you watch even more messed up stuff? I'm Chad Kwan, the host of Goosebuds. I invite comedians and creatives to come on and talk about a classic piece of media that gave them goosebumps. It could be horror movies like The Faculty or Poltergeist, cursed kids media like The Bionicle Movie or Grandpa's Magical Toys. And yeah, sometimes we read a Goosebumps or Fear Street book. Goosebuds is about loving weird old media and laughing about hidden horrors. Check out Goosebuds wherever podcasts are.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hey, greetings, travelers.
Greetings, travelers. How are we?
Hey. Wow. What a crazy few weeks it's been.
We've been traveling.
We've been selling the new book in person. We've got pre-orders going crazy. Thank you all for pre-ordering. And then we've got more coming. So go to eerietravels.com and see what all we're doing. We hit a milestone on YouTube, so thank you, subscribers. Let's keep that going up.
We love it that you guys are out there watching. And to be honest, we're going to catch up a bunch of videos in the next few weeks here. We have them. We just haven't. But anyway, we get super busy doing things and stuff, and then we are like, so we have a list. We're going to catch it all up. So listeners, don't worry. Travelers, we've got this, and you'll be able to see mine and Mark's absolutely handsome and gorgeous faces again soon here in the videos. So we appreciate you.
And we've been making videos of some of our travels. We'll be drip feeding them to you because this is even stuff for the next book. I know we still haven't launched this one, but pre-orders are done. The book is done. It's available at events. And now the next book is in the works.
Yeah, it's about halfway done. So we have a target. We are in the fall here. We should have the, or winter, I should say, actually, technically. Yeah. I consider October fall, even though I realize, whatever.
It is. No, October is the end of fall.
Yeah, hopefully by October, fingers crossed, Halloween, we'll be able to launch the Dark Heart of the Appalachians. So
yeah,
we're very, very excited about that. But enough book talk, because Mark, me and you were driving as we normally do, and we're going to talk more about our trip in an episode coming up here, but you brought up something. As me, a true crime fanatic, I had no idea about, but
yeah, I was surprised.
I reveal this, we have some breaking news.
Breaking news.
So it appears, because this isn't terrifying enough as it is, that scientists have now taken spider corpses and reanimated them into robotic spiders. Now, I do not understand what purpose this holds exactly. Honestly, it's terrifying if I'm... Oh. Now, I love spiders, but the thought of a legion or an army of robotic spiders that are controlled by somebody else literally seems like something that would be in a comic book. Like,
yeah, I think
if you did not see this news article and told you this happened, you would think I was making it up with, you know.
Yeah, no, it's legit. Even Carrie, who loves her spiders, was like, I don't know if we should be bringing them back to life. They do desiccate pretty quick, so I think we would have a kind of a, you know, we would kind of have an advantage to avoid our robotic spider overlords, because they wouldn't last long. But they do have lots and lots and lots of babies.
So I was going to say, so then you wonder if there'll be robotic babies. There's a whole rabbit hole I mentally went down with this and then thought of a story idea. So I'm going to probably have to include it in one of my future fiction books. But just saying out there, if Jurassic Park has taught us nothing, just because we can do it doesn't mean we should do it, universe. So that's my words of wisdom for the day, Mark, is let's not make new mistakes or the same old ones. Okay. So let's just move on. But the topic for today is actually, there's a lot of lore around this. There's a lot of folklore, but it is tied to a prolific serial killer that is
alleged prolific serial killer.
Alleged prolific serial killer who is no longer with us. So luckily he can't sue us for defamation. So and you ended up telling me the story. I had no idea at all, which was of course bizarre because I feel like I know a lot about old serial killers or alleged serial killers even, but let's jump into this. So where do you want to start?
I was surprised you didn't know about it because that means you didn't read Freaky Florida from History Press, available in fine bookstores and Cracker Barrels throughout the Sunshine State. But all right, that plug's done.
Oh, wow. I can't even believe you figured out how to plug your book in this. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, it's kind of important.
That's off to
it's
you.
The chapter in here was kind of the overview of this. So this is what I was hearing. We're going to go back in the Wayback Machine for Mark's life. So we're doing Quantum Leap, my own timeline here. And we're going to go back to 2000s. And I was starting research on all these cases. We were in the middle of Hellview Cemetery. And somebody said, oh, you have that tree back there. Is that the devil's tree? And like yourself, I hadn't heard of the devil's tree.
And Hellview Cemetery was a haunted house, just in case you're catching up, listeners. So
that was the haunted attraction I ran in St. Pete, Florida. And we based it all on local lore and legends. So people were trying to spot our Easter eggs to local lore and legends. And I hadn't even really thought about the devil's tree. Our tree was just the tree in my backyard. So and we always had different theming around it. So I was like, huh, let me look into this. So I start digging into it and you start finding odd things about this tree and it's in Port St. Lucie, Florida. So now we're going to get in the Wayback Machine again after that quick little flash. And this time the first like thing really describing it as something scary is a report in 1985 where the police near Port St. Lucie, near a place called Oak Hammock, it's on a canal, they found a couple who come running out of the woods in various states of undress, basically half naked.
I wonder what they were doing in the woods.
As my dad would have said, half naked, because naked. The difference between naked and naked, you know the difference?
No.
Okay. Naked means you don't have any clothes on. Naked means you don't have any clothes on and you're up to something.
Oh, okay. Now I know. I feel actually educated by that point.
Yeah. That's a hillbilly language 101 there. So they ran out of the woods half naked and terrified, and they went to the police and said there were cloaked figures swarming around them, and they were worried that something was going to go wrong. Black cloaked figures.
Well, that does sound a little bit terrifying, not gonna lie.
So we cut forward to 1992, and the next case I discovered are two children basically in the same area, just outside. They come running out of the woods as well, and again, a police officer patrolling the area spots them. And apparently they barely escaped being abducted.
Oh.
By cloaked figures.
Okay.
So they start digging into this. And I start digging into this more because the police are trying to figure out who these cloaked figures are. And of course, it's the early 1990s. The first case was in the 80s. What do they blame it on?
Satanic panic.
Satanists. So the satanic panic was in full bloom at this point. And so, of course, it had to be Satanists. So then start coming out of the woodwork. People have stories about hooded figures practicing occult satanic rituals in these woods, particularly around one tree. And anyone who got close to that tree would be scared to death or went missing without a trace.
Of course they did. Of course they did.
So now there is some objective proof to this because of those interesting reports, right? There's police reports. I mean, a couple running out of the woods half naked, you know, would not have just run to a cop because they were doing some naughty things in the woods. And you don't run to the cops when you're doing that, right?
Yeah. Usually, no, that's not who you want to encounter.
Authorities start digging into this, and then they realize very quickly what's happened. A legendary tree is at the heart of all this. They get to this tree, and there is candle wax on the roots. There are signs of strange things going on. So in 1993, after all this is building up, they call in a pastor to come and do something about it. So he puts a very large wooden cross next to the tree, and he performs an exorcism on the property. How well do you think that went? That
probably was not sanctioned by the church, but continue on.
Was not sanctioned by any church except for his. And then the next day, the tree, next to the tree, the cross had been turned upside down and candle wax had been dripped all over it. Black candle wax.
Big shock there.
Yep. And the black candles had apparently been made with sap dripping from the tree.
I didn't know that sap was that flammable. Is it that flammable?
Well, you mix it with the wax and it's not flammable. Okay. It just melts down just like a candle wax.
I was like, do not go out there trying to set trees on fire by lighting their sap. I don't think that's a thing.
Now, get up to the 2000s, around the year 2000. Mm-hmm. Not sure exactly, but basically the cops, the local municipality, all the officials were just so sick of these hooded figures in the woods and the ghost stories and all that, that we got to do something about this. So they decide to turn the area into a park.
Did they put a swing set next to it? Because that sounds like something.
Not quite. They're making it a nature park. And they start building a trail through it. They put up facilities. And that way they have a ranger there on staff. They can put police presence through it. It's also being developed, this area. There's a housing developed building next to it. So we got to do something about this. So one of the first things to do, though, we got to get rid of that damn tree, right?
Yeah, but cutting down trees sometimes is not quite as easy as people would think it would be. Even if you want to, you can't just go around cutting down trees.
Yeah, and this one's huge. You know, it's a good-sized tree. It's been there a long time. It does have this hole in the side of it where that sap is dripping. And it is kind of a dark sap. So, they decide though to hire two men, get rid of the tree.
So they come in with
They come in with their chainsaws and the first one starts. And the minute it hits the bark of the tree, his chainsaw stops working.
That's not good. Okay. But you know, that can happen.
Yep. Yeah. It happens. I've seen that happen. So manly men, they had a second chainsaw. So like you should have backup. And then it mysteriously malfunctions the second it hits the tree. So interesting. Wow. Now there are marks in the bark where these chainsaws occurred. Well, as you can tell, the tree survived.
I would assume so from the way this story is, because you didn't preface it as it passed him. Yeah.
So they put the chainsaws into the truck and are going to go get new blades, take them to the store, maybe buy a new chainsaw, you know, whatever. They're running off to Lowe's or Home Depot. Who knows? Early 2000s.
They're running off to repair these so they can finish the job they're being paid to do.
Right. And so they head off, and as soon as they get into their truck and head out, they immediately suffer a fatal accident, and both men die.
Oh, that's not good. That's kind of bad luck. Yikes.
Yeah. So, yeah, the legend grows, right?
Well, that, and now the park is probably like, do we do a repeat of that and then kill a couple more people trying to chop down the tree? I would like to be in the room having that discussion. I'm just saying, I want to be in the room going, do you think that was an accident, or do you think maybe we shouldn't cut down this tree?
Yeah, that's exactly what they say. Let's not cut it down. Let's just kill it. So they try poisoning the tree this time. They put all the killer agents they can into the ground. They don't want to do too much because they want to damage the forest around it. They just want this tree gone. It too doesn't work. So now they're like, well, let's just keep the sap from coming in. And this might actually kind of help the tree a little bit by filling it with cement. So they fill the hole.
I don't understand why anyone would think filling something with cement would help a tree, but okay, I'm just going to go with their logic.
There is some biological science to this. It can strengthen the trunk and all that. But the plan was is to do that and then just chop the top off maybe. And let it grow again smaller, prune it basically, but also to disguise it so that it wouldn't be the devil's tree anymore. That was some of the thoughts in this. Anyway,
and we all know those thoughts did not probably end well, but,
and again, the notes, the planning notes for this whole meeting are gone. We don't know. Don't know the whole story.
I would have lost them as well, knowing this probably doesn't end well.
Right. Don't know the whole story to this, but we have this fun thing that happens. People start realizing the reason the two guys died was there were probably bits of the tree in their chainsaws.
Wow. Well, what happens when they cement up the tree?
Well, it just keeps growing. It's fine.
But now it's got a cement casing around it. So now we've given it armor.
It's got a cement casing inside it. It's got a cement casing inside it. So you're never taking this thing down now.
Wow. Okay. Well done.
They stopped trying to prune it because this legend is going that if you have a piece of the tree, anyone who is in possession of it is cursed. Okay. So, and bad things will happen to you. And so nobody wants to prune the tree. Nobody's willing to do anything to the tree because of what happened to the two guys. But one lady gets this brilliant idea, talking about true crime. She's found out her husband's been cheating on her.
Okay.
And so she decides, I want him gone. And the best thing I could do, where no one will know is me, is if I go take a piece of the devil's tree and put it in his car. And then he will get in an accident and I will have the perfect crime.
Oh, yeah. I immediately think of a piece of logic she didn't think of, but what happens to her?
Well, I think the same piece of logic you didn't think of happened to her because she gets the piece and she starts to head out and she's in a terrible accident and almost dies.
But that's how we, I'm assuming, know this story is because she then shared what happened, right?
Yep. And this was in 2004.
Wow.
So this is fairly recent, you know. So it now it's like, kind of a common saying.
20 years ago, which is a while, keep in mind. But it sounds
this isn't some people think this is like an ancient legend that's been around for hundreds of years. Yeah, no, this one's pretty recent, so.
Wow.
And we'll get to the real source of this in a bit. But anyway, so the saying now is if you have a piece of the devil's tree, you don't want to drive with it. Right? You don't want to do.
Well, it sounds like you shouldn't have a piece of the devil's tree. It sounds like that is just going to end horrifically badly for you.
Yeah. So this is interesting, right? It gets weirder. Because I started getting reports of paranormal activity around the tree. And paranormal teams start researching it because we're hearing screams coming from the park's restroom when no one's in it. the doors in these new restrooms open and randomly slam shut. When you're walking through the forest, you know, now this is a forest in, it's a scrubland forest in my, near Miami. It's a little north. It's a little between Miami and Fort Lauderdale. And it's just hot and muggy all the time. But around the tree, cold spots, freakish cold spots.
I mean, you know, I'm going to assume that you visited this because you traveled to all the things.
Frequently.
would absolutely nope out of the situation. Like, there's
after taking you to a few of these places, this is one of the ones that actually got me.
Oh, where wow.
I don't like visiting this area. Now, EVPs, of course, recorded there. And then phantom figures, like shadow people, are seen often around the tree. I'm not sure if that's shadow people or the cloaked figures still returning. And also, there's other activity, including cult activity, still in the area. The black figures in the robes are still there. Often.
Well, I mean, it sounds like if you decide to play in that arena, which we do not encourage at all because preternatural, we don't know what that does. But it sounds like if you were thinking about playing in that particular arena, this is a power source. This would be the kind of place you would want to do that, which is terrible, horrific. Don't do that. But I if you were playing like that, I could see it.
Yep. And the energy there really does feel off if you go there. The beautiful thing about the park is that it is a nature center and there are wonderful animals there. And Carrie and I, whenever we go, we walk, there's the main path through the park and you'll pass a few trees that some of the people refer to as the fake devil trees or decoy trees because they're there. They look kind of creepy. They fit the vibe. And that's the main path. You'll hit those. And so we're hoping people hit one of them because they're in a little safer area, all that. But if you go around a little bit or you take this back way in, which is along the channel, you'll come into the tree a little easier. But there on that bank of the channel, there's a couple holes in the side. And there are wonderful box turtles that live in there. And they've been there hundreds of years, we think, because they are giant. And they are always with their little heads out when Carrie and I walk past. So it's beautiful. Oh, I bet
Carrie loves that.
Oh, she loves those guys. They're great. Usually throw a couple leaves their way so that you don't have to come out too far.
I'm assuming because the park loves the fact that this tree's there and they can do nothing about it. That they put markers and a path directly to this tree, of course, right?
Of course. No, they don't mark it at all and don't mention it at all. The problem is every time Carrie and I do go there, there is usually candle wax on the roots of the tree where somebody's burnt a candle in offering. The problem is it's scrubland brush in Florida. Do they not know about wildfires? If you're trying to do something dark and mysterious at the tree, do you want to be the one who burns it down? Do you want to be the one who destroys this power site? Do you want to be the one who hurts those poor animals that live there? Come on. We love those turtles. Please don't hurt exactly. That forest.
And I'm sure snakes and all kinds of other fun creatures that always in Florida swamps. So, okay. So what did the park do? I mean, I know that you found out where it is, but
how did that work? Well, the truth is, I'm going to say this. The truth is, even that tree is not the devil's tree.
Oh. It,
although people say they see some ghostly sightings there and all this, I think it's become a tulpa because this is the easier one to find. This is the easy one that looks creepy, and it's right next to a foundation of an abandoned house that's been destroyed and nature is reclaimed, which ties in to the real story.
I figured there was a real story. I'm like, there's got to be more to this. So basically they are all too happy to kind of go, yep, nope, absolutely. That's the tree. That's the one. That's when you're looking for.
And I think what's happened, though, as a tulpa or possibly a fearmonger type situation, it's shifted over to this because this is where all the attention is. This is where everybody is positive it happened. And what happened is something we're going to discuss after the break.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Prepare to be devoured. The Wolves of Wharton is a 6-part complete book series by Eerie Travels producer Bo Lake. It has been called dark and visceral, steamy, dramatic, and a fresh take on the werewolf mythos. If you like action, adventure, a large serving of body horror, and some steamy relations, the Wolves of Wharton series is for you. Pick it up wherever books are sold or at linktree.com/bow_lake.
Getting my couple sips of coffee in while we're on the break. I love that the video people, by the way, those travelers that watch us on like YouTube and stuff like that, please feel free to take sips of your beverage, grab a snack on our break while you're listening to our sponsors because, yes. Anyway, go team.
Okay.
So what actually happened at this tree, Mark? Because you told me the story now, but for the listeners out there, I went, what? So what is the story?
All right. This is a long one. And that's why we cut to break a few minutes early. We're going to talk about a guy that in the Florida papers has three names. And what if a man has three names in a paper in Florida, he's one of two things. He's either a politician, or B,
a serial killer.
You got it. So this guy was the latter.
Yeah. And he's not, let me just clarify, because we said it earlier, but technically the definition of a serial killer now is somebody who kills two people, not at the same exact time, two or more. That's now they're classifying a serial killer. So technically.
Technically he is. This guy
is a serial killer. By that definition, but.
And there's more to it. There's much more to this guy. So this guy was born in Wisconsin, March of 1946. And his name is Gerard John Schaefer.
You know what? It's so interesting because you said this name. And even though me and Bo are like true crime aficionados, so to speak, I had never heard of this guy.
And now the nice thing about this guy, I mean, the only nice thing about this guy,
I was going to say, there's a nice thing
after
about
he guy? Got caught, we were able to talk to him a little while, and he did write a lot of notes and he did write journals. So we were able to get an insight into him a little bit. Basically, we found that he moved from Wisconsin to Florida. His family moved there in the early 1960s. He moved to Fort Lauderdale, went to school there, was working on his college degrees when his parents divorced. And according to his stories, now this is all his stories, so we take this with a grain of salt. But basically, he said even in an early age, that he had many issues with sexual hangups, right?
Yeah, and we you know, we're going to go through that, but he is a sexual sadist by definition. Yeah.
And he lived in a house, which is now near where the Devil's Tree is. And one of the things he said he'd do was around the age of 12 is he would tie himself to a tree and he'd get excited, and then he would do something to hurt himself, you know, and fantasize and do terrible things, and particularly thought about women. And he would discover sometimes he would find his mom's underpants and he would wear them and hurt himself. He just really enjoyed those type of things. Wow. And then, you know, his dad favored his sister, so he wanted to be a girl. I wanted to die. He felt like a disappointment to his family, and his father just loved his sister. So when he played games, he'd want to die. So as we can tell, this kid is
a nature versus nurture always in some of these cases, but I feel like in this particular case, he was like this, just how he was brought up reinforced those things.
Mm-hmm. And he tried to be a teacher, but he really wanted to promote American values and honesty and all these things. And supervisor heard him talking about purity and political values and stuff on his students. So they let him go and told him to try to get a teacher job again in 1968.
Yeah, that's good, though.
I
know what happens next. So that goes from not good to way worse.
Yep. 1968, he gets married, but doesn't work out. She files for divorce within 2 years, claiming extreme cruelty.
Wow.
Right. He travels a little bit, but comes back, got a new goal in life. You know, he can't be a priest. He can't be a teacher. I'm going to be a cop. And he fails a couple psychological tests. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Then he gets hired. He gets hired by Wilton Manor's Police Department. They don't care. He's failed the tests. He's hired. Within a year, he's got commendations for drug busts. Within a month later, he's fired.
Yikes.
The chief who fired him said he didn't have an ounce of common sense. And now what happened was an FBI agent found reports that Schaefer was disciplined for running female traffic violators through the department's computer, getting their personal information, and then trying to call them for dates.
Oh, ew.
All right. So near the end of June, he signs on with Martin County Sheriff's Department and he moves to Stuart, Florida.
Okay.
And yeah, he suddenly gets caught. This is the dumb mistake, he says, that cost him his freedom.
Well, hold on. So
we're going to get to what's been going on behind the scenes, but we're just going his timeline right now. All right.
But yeah, what he was doing and the reason is so we need to go back in the Wayback Machine to when he had the original job and what he got fired for.
Right. Right. This is rough, gang.
Okay. It is. And so trigger warning, because this does involve sexual assault and, of course, murder.
Yep. It's. So he writes a book later that describes all this. But it's a fiction book. So.
Sure it is. Fiction. Yes. I'm doing quotations. Yep. Fiction.
One of the common sightings of the Devil's Tree is a figure of two young looking ghosts that are swinging as though they'd been hung. And then they collapse and scream and then disappear.
Okay. I don't love any of that. That would be terrifying. Yeah.
So what Gerard did was, while driving, he came on two pretty young girls hitchhiking through town. And he sees the opportunity. He's had all these desires for forever. He pulls them over and shows them his badge. Tells them, get in the car. And the girls were tricked into thinking he's a cop. You know, right? They know he's a cop. He is a cop. But they think
he's a hitchhiker. So they thought he was going to give them a ride.
Yeah. Well, they also thought they were in trouble. So
yeah,
because he throws them in the back, and he takes them to his old childhood home, where the tree is out back. And now here's his notebook. Here's the quote. Doing doubles is far more difficult than doing singles. But on the other hand, it also puts one in a position to have twice as much fun. There can be some lively discussions about which of the victims will get killed first. When you have a pair of teenage bimbolinas bound hand and foot and ready for a session with the skinning knife, neither one of the little devils wants to be the first one to go. And they don't mind telling you quickly why their best friend should be the one to die. Chilling.
I hate all of that. And I have horrible goosebumps and stuff that I can't imagine. So you're saying basically that he would take them, kidnap them, tie them up naked to this tree, and then make them fight over who was going to be killed first.
Yep. He goes into detail a little bit, saying stuff like how he told the girls to put on blindfolds. They were nervous, but did it anyway. It's getting dark, so he threw ropes around the branches of the tree, ties them around the girls' necks, and occasionally he'd lift them into the air, choking them, then let them back down to enjoy their begging and their pleading. Then he would gag them, bound them, and rape them over and over and over for an extended amount of time. Then, he's basically getting as much pleasure as he could out of this, right? Dragging it on. And eventually, he winds up killing the girls. The girls' names are Colette Goldenbaugh and Barbara Ann Wilcox. They both died by hanging. Both were 19 years old.
Yikes. And didn't, in his
book,
he would have them choose and then kill the other one right in front of them, right?
That's apparently what in his notes. Yeah. So he then decapitates them. But he's not done yet. Over the span of the next 10 days, he returns to the tree over and over again to have sex with their headless, decomposing bodies. So this guy is about as sick as it freaking gets, right?
That is an understatement of the century. Yeah.
Now, the story goes that this isn't coincidence, the devil's tree, right? This is the foundations of his old house. This is all the things.
Well, and at the time he was down in that area, the house was still kind of, it was abandoned, right? But it was still,
it was falling apart, but it was still there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so after he was done, he left the bodies because he kept thinking he was coming back. And he left the ropes around. But as we said, he got fired, had to move back up to Stuart, Florida, where he's moved in with his mom. Or a stepmom, and he gets another job with another cop, and this time Martin County Sheriff's Department. And that's when he has another incident, because that's what he does. He picks up two more hitchhikers, 17-year-old Pamela Wells and 18-year-old Nancy Trotter, on the highway near a local beach. And he tells them falsely that hitchhiking is illegal. And then I'm going to drive you back to your halfway house where you're staying. And he said, he was nice this time. He's trying a different approach. He takes them back to the halfway house and he says, hey, I'll meet you guys tomorrow. And I'm off duty. I'll take you to the beach. And we'll go there. And they agreed. And it's a nice cop. So July 22nd, he grabs them and he takes them to Hutchinson Island, which is a swamp and off A1A. And there he starts making sexual remarks, finally draws the gun, tells them he's going to sell them as white slaves to a foreign prostitution unless they do everything he says. He binds them again and balances them on a tree that he can find and with nooses around their neck. And if you slip, you're going to hang yourselves. And then he gets a call that he needs to report back to the sheriff's office for a case. He needs to come in.
So
he tells them
he has this charisma, because that's one of the things. Yeah. Like, he is a disgusting maggot of a human being. But like Bundy, he is not unattractive. He is a bigger dude, right? Mm-hmm. So he does this. So he moves up there. So he's used to doing this down in this area.
Or St. Lucie. Yeah.
The tree is near his old house, his old haunting grounds, and areas familiar. He moves up and he starts to do his thing again, whatever his thing is, right?
Yeah.
Alleged thing. Let's be careful so we don't get sued. Alleged.
And well, this is his thing at this point.
Yeah,
this one's proved.
It hasn't been proven yet, but it's definitely a thing. But then he has to find a new place to do the thing, right?
Right. And he's not as good at it.
He's got these girls tied to the tree, but work calls and says, "What is needed to come in?"
So he has to leave him, and he's like, "I'll be back. If you try to move, you're going to strangle yourselves." So they escape. Of course, the minute he's gone, and they flag down a police car. Of course, it's from his sheriff's office. But the plus side is that means they have no problem identifying the guy. Doesn't hurt that he gave them his own freaking name, because he's brilliant.
Well, again, as we're gonna learn, this has worked a lot in the past. You get confidence around things that have worked a lot in the past.
Yep. So at this point, he comes back and realizes they've escaped. So he immediately calls his boss, the sheriff, and says, "I've done something stupid. You're going to be mad at me. I kind of overdid it. I was trying to scare these young girls out of hitchhiking for their own good." And he was fired right then on the spot. And he was charged with false imprisonment. 2 counts of aggravated assault. But then he's released on a $15,000 bond.
Because you know what it sounds like when somebody does something like this? And we have to remember, this is, what year was this again? This was in the
1972.
Yeah. So although there were active people being quote unquote serial killers, mainly on the West Coast for whatever reason, and Ohio, which... that's a whole other thing, is why everybody comes from California, Florida, Ohio, and Texas when they're serial killers. But what's interesting, though, is that I don't know that term was coined yet, right? Of being a serial killer.
I think it was, but it was not common. It just really wasn't common.
So they're like, you know what's a good idea? Let's let him out of jail.
Yeah. Well, in 1972, he pleads guilty to the assault charge, but all the other counts are dropped. And the judge called him a thoughtless fool and sentenced him to 1 year in county jail and 3 years probation. And he starts serving his sentence. But while he's doing that, here's where it goes, crazy, right? As that wasn't bad enough. So 2 other girls are missing from the neighborhood. They were not as lucky as the other girls. September 27th, 1972, Schaefer was free on bond at this point. 17-year-old Susan Place and 16-year-old Georgia Jessup vanished from Fort Lauderdale. Susan's parents say the girls were last seen at her house, leaving with an older man named Jerry Shepherd on their way to play guitar at a nearby beach. They never came back. The Lucille Place, the mom, noted his license number and a description of his blue-green Datsun. And it wasn't till March of 1973 before they tracked the plate number back to Schaefer. And by that time, he was already in jail for assaulting teenage girls. Now, he denies any contact with Place and Jessup. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about. But On April 1st, 1973, a man is back at Port St. Lucie, and he's collecting, there is a few of them, and they're collecting aluminum cans around these old abandoned houses that are there. Guess where he's at?
Yes, that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he found a crime scene, basically indicated that two girls were tied to a tree and had been butchered. So then, April 7th, they realized, hey, this is exactly what he did to the other girls. This is very similar. We've got his name. So they search his mom's house. And they found his trophy case. You ready for this?
No, because we talked about it, I already know what's coming, but that pit is in my stomach again, because this is so disgusting and horrific for these families. But go ahead.
All right. So evidence recovered, a stash of women's jewelry, 100+ pages of writing and sketches depicting various mutilations and murders of young women, newspaper clippings about women missing all the way back to 1965, pieces of IDs belonging to vanished hitchhikers, including Colette Goodenough and Barbara Wilcox, the 19-year-olds, two girls who had been, these are both 19 as well, and these two girls had been last seen alive on January 8th, the week before Schaefer was sent to jail. And their skeletal remains were found in early 1977, but no cause of death could be determined, so no charges were filed in that case. After news clips referred to one of the February 1967 disappearances of a waitress named Carmen Halleck, who had been abducted from her home, supposedly, items from her jewelry were found in Schaefer's hoard, and along with a gold tooth identified by her dentist. But again, no charges filed.
And wasn't it, so it had jewelry, like IDs and driver's licenses from way more people than had. Do we have a number of how many of those?
Not exactly. We know he's linked to a disappearance of a 14-year-old named Mary Briscolino. I always want to say the victims that we kind of know.
Yes.
A 13-year-old girl named Elsie Farmer, who went missing in October 1972. And their skeletons were found in 1973. But again, no cause of death could be determined. So no charges are filed. It's skeletal remains. So hard to determine what killed him.
Well,
and the list of his suspected victims is just growing, right? Constantly.
Yeah. And he would would decapitate them. But he'd leave them out in the wilderness. So anyone who knows anything about that kind of forensic, sometimes it's really hard because animals and things like that to determine cause of death, because you never necessarily find like an intact, complete skeleton, you know, buried, preserved, whatever. So no, this is just horrific.
Yep. And he did this and he traveled in Europe in Africa for a few months at one point, but we don't even know about that unless you read his notes.
Well, and didn't like two of his stepmothers, quote unquote, disappear?
One of them definitely did. And one of them may have it's a lot of this. So anyway, he's indicted May 18th, 1973 for the slayings of those Jessup and Place, right? Back at the Devil's Tree, because they found it hurt their teeth in his collection. He's held without bond. He is convicted on the two counts of first degree murder with concurrent terms of life imprisonment. So he hits 20 appeals, all rejected over the years. And he was basically, like you said, you didn't know about him because he's kind of forgotten till 1990s, when a former high school girlfriend of his falls in love with him in prison. And she decides to help him publish his papers, which his notes, which he has always claimed were just research of these missing girls. And he's going to write a book called Killer Fiction, which is how I could have done it. And supposedly he's just getting into the mind of whoever killed all these women.
And
in vivid detail.
Does this sound like when we talk about narcissistic, maggoty, filthy pieces of trash?
Yeah.
Bundy. Bundy did the exact same thing. He would not talk about the actual murders he committed, but when the person said, well, how would you have done it if you were him? Then we get these very graphic descriptions of everything he would have done, you know, hypothetically, if he was the killer.
Yeah. He's one of his stories is a thing called Murder Demons. You gotta love that. And this he wrote about 1991. Yeah, what crimes am I supposed to confess? Am I supposed to confess about Farmer and Briscolina? What do you think this book is? You want confessions, but don't recognize them when I anoint you with them? We're just getting started.
Ugh,
and
so
and then so, so gross. And then I just want to read this one bit. So on January 20th, 1991, he writes in a letter. He's like, I've always harped on the district attorney's list of 34 deaths attributed to me. In 1973, I sat down and drew up my own list. As I recall, my list was just over 80. And then he's like, the next day, I was given more time to reflect. I'm not claiming a huge number. I would say it runs between 80 and 110. But that's over 8 years and three continents. Like one lady, I drowned her in her own vomit while watching me disembowel her girlfriend. I'm not sure that really counts as a valid kill. And do pregnant ones count as two kills? It's very confusing.
Oh my God. It's this is a just a horrifically vomitous swine.
Yeah. And then once he starts getting labeled
of a human being, it's just horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. He calls them all the other words. I said lady, he used a different word. Course, he gets branded as a serial killer officially by Judge William Steckler, undeniably linked to murders beyond the two that he's convicted for. And he boasts in all these private letters and stuff about being a killer. And then he says, oh, I'm just writing these guys to get them riled up because, and one of the guys he's writing is Ted Bundy. He's like, Ted wanted to be number one, and I can't have that. But he's like, no. This is all just fun. I'm messing with these guys. I've been framed. None of this is true.
It's so.
So he's only convicted.
The narcissism that gets to this, and you know, he, obviously, he's a sexual sadist and a necrophiliac, and words that I can't even make into words for how gross this human being is. And it always is fascinating to me that with the egos they have, that they don't want that fame linked to them. Like they want to say they're horrific, but they want to say they're not guilty of doing this. But at the same time, they want to be the best. Like, you know, even Gacy had that problem where, I mean, he quote unquote ran out of space, so started dumping them in the river, but then was like, but I didn't kill any of them.
Yeah.
What? You know?
They want the credit, but they don't want to be responsible.
Yeah.
That's the deal. So
what, where is this giant piece of feces?
Well, he did a TV. He was so upset when the girl stopped publishing his book and decided, yeah, he's a piece of crap. Why am I in love with this guy? When she started reading his stuff. So then he got on Inside Edition and did an interview trying to protest his innocence, which of course Inside Edition ran it as interview with a serial killer. So he got even more upset about that. He starts throwing lawsuits out. He's helping other prisoners file their appeals because he's filing 20 appeals himself. Of course, they're not going anywhere. But as he's doing that, he starts feeding when they start saying, well, I did this, I did that. he starts feeding that back to the cops as an informant to try to get better treatment. Guess how that ends up?
I'm going to say that probably ends very badly because snitches get stitches.
Exactly. December 3rd, 1995, another inmate barges into his cell, slits his throat, stabs him in both eyes and many other places. This guy, Vincent Rivera, who's serving life plus 20 years for murders in Tampa. No motive for killing Schaefer, but we're pretty sure he was a rat, you know, and that gets you. So as bad as Vincent Rivera is for serving life, hats off to you for ridding the world of this piece of crap.
You know, so. I always go when people who are in the same prison with you decide you're disgusting enough to take out. That's a whole level of cretin, right? That you have to be in order for hardened criminals to think it's a really good idea to remove you from being around in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty terrible. And again, couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, right?
Sarcasm.
I just wish it had happened a little sooner.
A lot sooner, because unfortunately for a lot of these families, because of the way he did this, all they have is like an ID and hope that kind of explains it, but no bodies, no proof.
It's sad. Of course, his influence on other killers, Robert John Bardo, another man with three names, murdered actress Rebecca Schaefer, and he had been corresponding with Schaefer and claimed him as an inspiration.
Ugh.
Our wonderful Otis Toole, the Adam Walsh link, and also the guy who just confessed everything. He says he was talking with Schaefer, and that's why he did some of the things he did. Of course, we don't know. And of course, is using his badge to gain trust becomes a cautionary tale and starts making people, though, this is a good positive, he makes scrutiny of police officer backgrounds and psychological evaluations mandatory. So for cops.
Which is good because, you know, the police officers are amazing. And I'm not saying every single one of them, because there are bad people in every profession, but they put their lives on the line every day trying to keep us safe. And it's horrific when somebody taints that, because that's part of what makes it hard when you're trying to figure out who you can trust. And we want to be able to trust police officers who are keeping us safe. So,
Yep. So as bad as he's gone, you know, we do believe he has evidence of at least 30 other girls' deaths. And that's all across the country, not just Florida. Although Florida, you know, was a tourism state and it was burgeoning in the early 70s. So transient population, people just coming in. And also that tourism made it feel safe, right? That's what helped Bundy. That's what helped him. It's terrible.
No, so, it's horrific. And good riddance, he's gone.
And again, those books are available. Don't read them unless you really want to get into the mind of a serial killer. And again, don't spend money on him. Although he is dead, it's best to just check him out of a library. I think they're on Libby and stuff like that. So,
oh my God, it's horrible. Yeah. But so you actually got to go to the real Devil's Tree, which we're not going to say where that is, because
it's close to the Devil's Tree. And if you want your travel, you go to Okamek State Park, which is behind a big housing complex that was built. And you wander, you can go to the fake Devil Trees. You can take that second entrance on the left, which takes you to, if you walk down the channel, say hi to the box turtles for us. You'll know the tree when you see it. That's all I can say. It's pretty crazy. You'll feel it. You'll do all that. But the real Devil's Tree is a few yards away on another way, but we're not going to discuss that. But you will see the foundations of that old house. But there's foundations all around that park because there were more houses and Schaefer's was not exactly there. It's a little ways off. Yeah. This guy was a sexual psychopath. And
I feel especially icky. So travelers, thank you for going through that with us, but let's not give this disgusting human any more power.
There are more victims' names that we are pretty sure he did, where they found her lost jewelry. One lady named Lee Hainlein, and some other stuff. That's like, I want the victims' names to live on. I don't want this guy's name to
live on. Agreed. 100%.
Now he of course blames his father and abandonment and all that. There's no excuse for any of this.
No, and, I mean, I hate to hear that people have gone through, you know, horrific childhood experiences, and you can feel, you know, sorry for that child, but there is absolutely no sympathy for the monster of an adult he turned into.
Yeah. And then, like I said, if you go visit the tree, don't wear a black cloak and don't light candles. We don't want that nice little forest to be destroyed. The box turtles, come on. We love those.
You know what? Travelers, if you go, stop at your favorite medieval shop. Stop to see your favorite witches. Grab some positive vibe crystals, some positive vibe tokens of any kind. And let's just put positive vibes towards it, because maybe we can outbalance those topas that are there. How about that, Mark?
That sounds wonderful. So, travelers, I don't think we have anything more to say. Thank you, Patreon members, for supporting us through this dark, terrible story. And thank you to everybody who likes and shares. Thank you to all the people we've met at our recent events who are now new subscribers and new listeners. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We're just growing and growing. Tell your friends, like and share, and on your favorite platforms, Spotify, iTunes, iHeart, give us a rating. Hopefully you enjoyed this. I'm going to take us out, Erica. All right.
I hope so, because I need to go take a shower and, you know, hug a cute fluffy animal right now, because
Yep. So when you're on those lonesome highways, you break down, and you realize it's a long, long walk somewhere, maybe it's best to just take the walk and enjoy it and not hitchhike, because you never know. And then when you do go to the Devil's Tree, remember, just enjoy it, experience it, and definitely don't take a piece of it, because you might end up somewhere you don't want to be. And we'll see you on the other side.